This is episode 37 with Ani Alexander.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tayo Roxon.
I really, really loved this interview because it was so educational. Ani is a remarkable teacher in the sense that she's willing to share what it's like to live in Armenia. I had no idea what that was like, and she so eloquently detailed some of the nuances growing up there and what it was like when the USSR was still there and some of the cultural differences and the way things have evolved since then. She also dove into the different ways you can use your literary skills. She is a best-selling author, after all. And, she was just being awesome. So, please listen and leave feedback. Take a look at the show notes at the website. And just let me know what your thoughts are on Twitter or on my blog. Talk to you soon. Today, I have with me the lovely Ani Alexander. She's a best-selling author, all-around storyteller, podcaster, and coach. Welcome to the show, Ani.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So I did a little dive into your background. Can you tell us a little bit more about who you are and how we're talking from Armenia? You're in Armenia, right?
In Armenia. Well, I was born in Armenia and I lived here until I was 11 years old. Oh. After that, my father had a business contract and worked abroad. So we traveled quite a lot. And then my mother got jobs abroad. So we traveled quite a lot as well. And I ended up living abroad from when I was 11 until when I graduated university at 20. So when I was 20, after 10 years of living abroad and in different countries, I came back to Armenia, and that's where I live since then. So it's been quite a long journey. So I studied in different schools in different countries. I studied at the university abroad as well. And then when I came back to Armenia, I started my corporate career here. And I also had many changes there too. So I worked in different spheres, starting from banking to telecom to marketing and different development projects. So, but mainly I worked for international companies. So I was still involved in the different cultures and different countries at work as well. So basically that's it. Just a few years ago, I left the corporate job because I wasn't really satisfied with that. I realized that it was not for me. So I decided to take I also realized that, I'm in that age that, if I don't make it now, I won't make it later on. So I decided to take this risky step and get away and try to follow my passion and my dreams and do something meaningful. So I left the corporate, I wrote books. Now I'm working with newbie authors. Basically I'm doing what I really like to right now.
There's no better time than now, right?
Yeah.
so you were talking about how you grew up in different countries. Can you talk about the different countries you grew up in and also what specifically your parents did that led them to travel around so much?
Well, my father is an engineer, so he worked in the optical and electronical spheres, and they were doing different chips for different equipment, let's say. I don't know the exact details, but so that's what he did. And my mother is a diplomat, so she worked in embassies. And, you know, the first half of the travel was related to my father's contracts, and the second half of the travel was related to my mom's missions. And so that's how it started. I left Armenia when I was 11 years old. We went to live to Bulgaria, and I went there to high school. Well, it was quite difficult because I didn't know the language, and after the collapse of the Soviet Union and the Soviet system, my generation didn't speak Russian either, so we didn't really have a common language to share. Which was bad, but at the same time very good, because it forced me to learn the language very fast, because I just had to.
Yeah.
After that, when I graduated from high school, in between that, actually, we also lived for a while in the Czech Republic. And there I went to school also for about half a year. It was like a period of 3 years approximately when we were like in Bulgaria and in Czech Republic. And after that, I lived for about a year in Moscow, Russia. And after Russia, we left for Belgium, and we lived in Brussels. I lived there with my family for about 3 years. And then my family was back to Armenia, and I stayed there alone for 2 more years because I was studying at the university. So I stayed there until I graduated. So it's been a nice ride, challenging, but nice. It changed me a lot. And I think that, you know, there is really a big influence in everything we did during those years, because the way I am now, I think it's mostly because of all these different cultures, and because I had to adjust to so many things.
No, I agree. Can you tell me about that change you experienced? You know, how did you connect in these different cultures? I know USSR, is no longer there, but, you know, it broke up during that period, so you had to learn different languages. So,
well, actually, we always have to learn different languages, because Armenians, I mean, no one speaks Armenian besides Armenians. So you do have, if you want to communicate with other people, you do have to learn other languages. And what we do over here, we all study Russian, and we most of us study English. And I went to a special English school where we studied all these three languages simultaneously from year one. So by the time I left Armenia, I already knew three languages.
Okay, so you knew English, Armenian,
and Russian.
And Russian, and then you went to, you know, you were traveling to all these countries.
I went to Bulgaria. I studied Bulgarian, and eventually, since I was there, like, you know, among Bulgarians and studying in Bulgarian school, I ended up knowing Bulgarian as well as I know my native tongue right now.
Talented. Talented. That's skilled. Okay, well then, how did you make friends? Because I can't imagine it was as easy as that.
Well, you know, in the beginning, like the very first days, it was quite difficult, because I already had friends here in Armenia, and you leave and you end up being in a completely different place. And, you know, children were, you didn't know anyone first, and they were quite different, I have to admit. You know, it's not like, you know, children everywhere are just the same. No, it's not like that, because the way they grew up was different. So as a result, they were, you know, not different, like us as well. So the first weeks were quite challenging, because I didn't even understand the language. So you ended up having the feeling that people speak about you, but you had no idea what they talk.
Yeah.
So, but what I did later on, when I was already understanding, I didn't tell immediately that, you know, I already understand your language. So it was very, very fun to, you know, to be around and to listen what they tell about you, because those were the times you genuinely knew what people thought about you.
Yeah, no, you're completely right. I do that with my tribal language, because we speak English in Nigeria, but there are many, many, many different tribes. And I'm not fluent in my tribal language. I'm actually not close to fluent, but I understand a few words, and I often play dumb when I'm around my family members, because they always think that, oh, this kid doesn't understand anything. And then you can hear what they're saying. And then it's yeah. like, oh, okay, that's what you really think. So
yeah, that's the fun part of it. And, you know, once you know what they really think, you already can, you know, get the picture of who, you know, who thinks what about you.
Exactly.
And then you select the ones who genuinely like you.
Yeah.
And don't really mingle with the ones who don't, because it's like, you know, it's senseless to to have relationship with people who are not really interested.
No, exactly. I think it's true as well. So can you tell me what you've learned? What you learned from your period? You said you learned a lot. It shaped who you are, or part of who you are. And for me, it shaped who I am.
Yeah, well, first of all, I learned that, you know, people are not the same. So they are different. Mm-hmm. And cultures are different also. And what I learned is that it's not a bad thing. Actually, it's not just because the other nation is different from yours, it doesn't mean that it's worse or better. It's
exactly.
just different. So that was the first realization. Second realization, which was a bit more difficult, was that it's, you know, you don't really, yes, it's easy, easier to kind of change yourself and become like the others in order to adapt faster, but it's okay to stay different as well. So you kind of, what I ended up doing was, of course, I had my national upbringing and national values and things like that. So I was shaped kind of based on how I was raised, but I started kind of questioning myself whether it was really something that was okay with me, with the way I personally think.
Right.
And at the end, and also I ended up, you know, taking some things from other nations which I liked myself personally. So as a result, I ended up becoming truly cosmopolitan, because I became a mixture. So I'm not really, I don't feel like I'm representing any specific nationality, because
right.
I'm not typical Armenian anymore because of the experience I went through. So I'm a bit different because I lived in different places and they influenced me. Now a bit more or a bit less, it doesn't matter, but you know, it shaped me as a bit different person, especially because of the age I was there at.
Yeah.
So it was like from 11 to 20. It's like the vital years where a personality is shaped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And as a result, I became like a mixture of different cultures mainly. And as a result, which is not exactly the best thing, but that's what happened and that's the way it is, you end up not really being someone from them. So, you know, I'm not, you know, Bulgarians know that I'm not Bulgarian. I'm not one of them. Armenians know that I'm, you know, I'm Armenian, but I'm not exactly like the right typical Armenian
typical
person.
Armenian,
so I'm
yeah.
not really part of identical Armenian like them. And I'm not like anywhere. So everywhere I go, no matter
yeah.
whether I come back to countries I lived in later, after that, if I go back to those countries, everywhere I go, it's not like you are just, you know, part, an identical part of that group. So you end up being like partly an outsider because you're a bit of everything. But at the same time, it's fine because, as I said, it's fine to be different. So it's not really a major issue because no one really cares that much about the small differences.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I wish you could see me right now because I'm chuckling because, I also am a diplomatic kid and I moved I had a my first move was when I was younger. I was like two or one rather, but I was too young to remember. But then the real time that I started moving a lot was when I was 10 and you were 11. So it's yeah. it's similar. And then you were talking about the difference. It just so happens that, you know, that my, I don't know if I told you earlier, but my mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. And it's all about embracing that different part of about ourselves. Yes, we're all part of the human race, but we're all unique in our own ways. And I'm always trying to highlight the different aspects of different people and how they can use that to make a difference. So, Ani, you, since you so lovely, you eloquently talked about how different you were and how okay it was, how is it that you use your difference to make a difference?
Well, what I'm doing mostly, well, I'm working now with writers mainly. And what writers are, they are creative people who are storytellers, who are telling stories. And each story is unique. So what I'm trying to make them believe is, of course, there is a commercial value in what they write. Of course, there are genres which are sold better. Of course, there are many creative courses which teach you how to write and what's the way to craft a novel and things like that.
Right.
But I also tell that, you know, don't really get too drifted with those things because you have your unique way and you know it best. So being different in this case is an asset, because if everyone wrote exactly the same way they are taught to write, we will end up reading the same books over and over again. So this difference is something they have to use. They have to have their unique writing style. Basically what I believe is you have to know a good grammar and you have to spell well. The rest is up to you. So it's good to know the rules, but yes. You can break them. You can break them, and you just, you know, you have to kind of, you know, illustrate and show that difference of yours, because that's what's going to differentiate you from the others. And most probably readers will like that part of you.
Exactly. So you're using your difference to make a difference by showing others how they can find their voice through writing.
Yes.
That's good. I don't know if this is common. I've always written, ever since I started off with poetry. When I was in middle school, high school, and then it sort of graduated to blogging. And then when I figured out this, you know, this third culture kid is essentially what we are when people spend the formative periods of their years outside of the parents' cultures. Once I figured out that word, I started, I don't know if maybe you can tell me if this is common or not. I had all these influx of ideas. So I wrote three books in a span of 4 months. So mm-hmm. I started in July, but I had never really experienced that influx of creativity before. And, you know, before I do a weekly blog, so I write almost every day. But the idea where I started to write 90-page books, it was I don't know, it was just insane. It was like I had this creativity. I needed to just write. And it was like an outlet, and I was expressing my personality. And a lot of the themes of the book were things that I could relate to. So it seemed like I had a constant inflow of ideas and of where the direction could go to. And I dove into fiction writing for the first time. And that was very weird for me to write from that, because I always did nonfiction. And what was always weird was the he said, she said part. But coming up with the themes, I just said, you know, I'm going to use a unique style and just write my personality.
Well, you know, many writers would kill for that, because, I mean, many writers have just the opposite problem, because they have different writer's debts. They start writing, but then they think it's not good enough and they stop like in the middle, or they go back and start to edit the text they don't really forget everything and write just for themselves. So there are really, really many barriers that keep them from getting into the stage you were at. So it's really not common. Many people would like to get there, but they have different things which come on their way.
Yeah.
But you know, when it comes, you just have to get the wave and try to keep it for as long as possible.
Yeah, you know, you said many writers would kill for that. I still don't know if my stuff is good enough because I've never written fiction before until now and have, you know, a mini trilogy going on. But to me, I'm not sure if it's good enough. I've never written fiction. Maybe no one's going to read this, but...
Well, it's, you know, the first drafts are never perfect. Right. Even like the best writers can't write a perfect first draft. So that's something that people have to understand. If you're writing your first draft, it doesn't have to be perfect and you don't have to make it perfect. You just have to finish it. So it's just the issue of putting words on paper or on a key, you know, typing it on the keyboard and doing it until the end. So that's the thing. Later on, you will self-edit it. Later on, you will have an editor who will work with the text. Later on, you can fine-tune things. But the issue, the biggest issue is that, you know, if you start thinking if it's good enough or not, or if it's, you know, rightly written or not, you may end up not finishing it at all. And you need your draft to work on it later on.
Yeah. See? Sage advice, Amani. Finish what you start, and then you can worry about the other things. So, you mentioned that you're an author.
Yeah,
I know your pen name is Ani Alexander, but why don't you just tell the audience what your last name is?
Well, actually, Alexander is my father's name. So what I did is I just, you know, I didn't change my name. Mm-hmm. I just took away the surname. So in English, I mean, not in English, but just like that, my real full name is Ani Alexander Chibukchan. And, well, it's, you know, the surname is difficult to pronounce, difficult to remember. It's quite, you know, different for us, and it's not very easy for foreigners to absorb.
Right.
So I thought that eventually one day when I become a famous writer or famous whatever, and people end up talking about me and telling, you know, have you read the book of Ani Chibukchan? Mm-hmm. I don't think they will, first of all, remember the name.
Right.
And second, they can pronounce it right. So I would end up, you know, listening to different variations of wrong pronunciation of my surname.
Oh, trust me. I know which, what you
mean. So what I decided, and I didn't really want to take a pen name in a sense that to take a completely different and foreign name for me, which I don't associate with.
Right.
So I thought about it quite a long time. I couldn't come up with anything creative or think that I would like or would kind of feel comfortable with. So I just decided that what I will do is I will just take out the surname. It will not be a big change for me. I'm still comfortable because, it's just part of my real name, full name.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the solution I found for that stage.
No, it's good. I mean, even now that my full name is Akintayo Abiola Broxson, but Tayo is short for Akintayo, and people still say Tayo all the time. I mean, so my name is often mispronounced all the time. But I found that I love my name, and my full first name Akintayo means the brave one or warriors brought us joy. So you know, it's a really really nice name, but people never know how to pronounce it. So I took, you know, like a shorter version, Tayo, which is like Andy for Andrew, just so people could actually relate to it more. So, but I could definitely relate to you at that point. So it's always unique when people, and it's always weird when someone pronounces your name, mispronounces your name after you've corrected them, and you never know if you should just let them say it, like, okay.
You know different languages, and you know this thing that there are languages which don't have some of the sounds you have in your. So even if they try hard, there are some things they just can't pronounce it right. It's not like they don't want to, but they just can't.
You just let them go. In middle school, I used to go by Roxin, my last name, because it was so much easier. But then I just said, you know what? I'm going to make you guys say at least one part of my first name. But all right, so that's. That's cool. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about was what living in Armenia is like. I live in New York City, and I that was a very intentional move, just because I love being around different cultures, and I love stepping outside and hearing someone speaking French and then another person speaking Spanish. and someone arguing in Italian. But what is living in Armenia like?
Living in Armenia is just the opposite of living in New York, because you will only, I mean, most probably you will only hear Armenian, mm-hmm. because 98% of Armenia's population are Armenians. So you won't really see different cultures apart from the tourists.
Okay.
And maybe a bit of the international companies who have expats working here, but not much. And it's let's say it's very safe to live in Armenia. You can, you know, walk in the streets quite freely. You can walk in the streets even late evenings. Nothing will happen to you. It's very safe. It's very nice climate generally, so it's, you know, we have all the four seasons, so you will have the snow, you will have the hot summer, you get a bit of everything. And it's I think compared to New York and other big cities, I've never been to New York, but you know, I've been to Moscow, which is quite hectic and big city as well. Mm-hmm. It's very quiet for living, let's say, because the speed is not so high, because the city itself is not very big, so you can go like the downtown part, you can walk it absolutely all of it. So you may, if you are living in the center, you might not even need a car, because you have everything in a walking distance. And so basically it's a less hectic city, and it's, we also have kept the family values, so our family values are very strong, and families spend lots of time together, and usually children live with parents before they marry. And even when they do, if they have some issues with buying a new house or something, they even live with two families in one house. So it's, you know, children are really connected to their parents, to their grandparents. And it's one of the things which have been kept from the old times, which I like, because I think in more civilized places, you get this problem of, you know, not seeing enough of your family, and especially if your kids are a bit older than you, you kind of lose the connection and the quality relationship with them. So in that sense, living in Armenia is better from that part, from that point of view. But at the same time, we still have this Soviet mentality heritage, which is changing quite a lot, but it's still there. It's not gone, especially with the older generation. Okay. And that's why we still depend, most of us, well, I'm generalizing, of course, but most of the people depend on society opinion. And society opinion also is quite strong and not very flexible. So you end up with different things which are good or bad, and you might, I mean, you need to have a really strong personality to oppose to that.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit, the Soviet mentality?
Well, the Soviet mentality, it's as I said, it's changed a lot. But when I was back at school, and it was Soviet times, for example, you ended up being taught everything. So you were taught what to think about different things. Mm-hmm. You were taught how to behave. And so you had like this firm, already predefined structure you were following. So you ended up, even let's say this, I mean, since I'm about writing, let's say this. We had literature classes. So we had Armenian literature class, we had Russian literature class in Russian. And what we were getting was we were covering different books, let's say. So we had in program, each class had in program different books that they had to read and cover during that year. So, for example, you end up reading one book, and what you do is later on the teacher calls you to the desk and you start telling, you know, like something like analysis of the book, or, you know, she asks you to elaborate on the character and things like that. But how do you do that? You don't tell your opinion, because you, in the textbook, you have already the elaboration and the analysis which you have to study. So you end up, yeah, even in literature, you end up just, you know, studying what you are supposed to think. And there were many, many books which were forbidden because they did not really go along with the Soviet ideology.
Right.
And so you ended up, yeah, just, you know, what they were doing is they were growing people who were identical, and the individual part and the personality part was suppressed. Creativity was suppressed too, because you ended up, we had a really great, amazing educational system, and we started really, we had the high quality education in terms of both languages and especially the scientific subjects like physics, mathematics, etc. So those were really, really great. But at the same time, the creative things in children, they were suppressed, because if you are taught exactly what you're supposed to do and how, then your creativity periodically starts, you know, to decrease and decrease, and at the end you end up not having a creativity. And also the art and the artists were not really like appreciated too much. So very often if a child was said, I want to become a painter, then the parents were saying, yeah, but how are you going to live? What are you going to live on, you know, because painters don't make money. So you ended up having all those. We had lots of scientists, very, very famous scientists. We had lots of mathematicians and things like that. But the people who were good at arts were exceptional.
Thank you for that so much. I was asking because I had a feeling it had to do with some of the communist regime, because I grew up Nigeria. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but there was a period of time when Nigeria was run by a military dictatorship. Yeah. And it was very interesting to see how the you know, the country and the mentality. I mean, it still hasn't necessarily changed as much. It's just maybe some would say different masks, same government, but
I have to be honest, here it's changing. It has changed a lot. And what made the change, because later, I mean, you couldn't just, you know, stop that anymore, was before we were getting censored information. So yep, we didn't censored. Know.
Exactly.
So we didn't know anything about what's happening abroad, and we just knew the things which we were told, that, you know, the capitalism is a bad thing, that all these European countries are decaying and we're, yeah, you know, we're much better, etc. So you don't really get the real picture. We didn't know anything, and we just, you know, we couldn't get a source. There was no source of information, because if you were caught of listening to a foreign radio which you somehow managed to catch the wave of, it was quite risky. You would be punished for that.
Exactly.
So what was the problem was, well, maybe some people say ignorance is bliss, and maybe we were happy because we didn't compare ourselves to others, and we had no idea how others live, and the way we lived was quite safe, because the Soviet regime had a good things too. I have to be honest about this. It's not something I didn't like it at all, and I'm really happy that it's gone. Everyone had free education, everyone had free medical service, and everyone had a job after graduating the university, and everyone was provided a free house. So, you know, you ended up being somehow safe. And we didn't have homeless people. We didn't have real poverty. Everyone was equally, well, not poor, but, you know, no one was rich, let's say. So that is why many, many people had difficulties when the regime changed, because you had to adapt, you had to hustle, you know, things were different. You didn't have that security anymore. And, you know, and many people had really, real big problems adapting to that.
I really appreciate the knowledge, and it's you know, when we started to come out of our dictatorship, a lot of the reporters that we had, because a lot of them went to exile because they were, you know, you weren't allowed to voice out your opinion as much in the early 90s in Nigeria. So they would write about the government from abroad, but you were saying, you know, that censorship, we had a lot of that censorship too. So it's funny how as the government starts to change, freedom of speech starts to come out more and more, exposure to Western or any other thing, any other form of media starts to come out. So, I'm, you know, it's interesting how the progression goes like that. Okay. All right. So you gave us more than enough knowledge about how to live in Armenia. So I really appreciate that, because that's one thing I try to do with the show, try to educate the people around the world about other places. So,
well, you know, in Armenia now you are in this very interesting stage when you are in transition, because we have very strong Armenian cultural mentality and Armenian culture, because we are one of the most ancient cultures in the world. And and the thing is that now the youth is becoming more modern, and, you know, it's starting adopting the other mentality as well. So we're into this, you know, transitional period where things are changing, and the older generation is not really happy about that. Uh-huh. But the younger one is very, very fast adapting things which they think they want and need. So it's becoming like, it's, I think this is the period of concentrating change. Yeah. And it's very interesting to observe, because things change every year, and you can see it in people's lifestyle, you can see it in what is on TV, and, you know, things are changing a lot. So you're just in the middle of these changes.
Well, if it's not too personal, how are you raising your kids with this change?
Well, I have one son, and he's 10 years old. And well, since I already was changed by the time he was born, I don't think he's... I'm trying to encourage his individuality. Okay. So, and I'm trying... Well, I don't know if it, you know, I do it very well or not, but I'm trying to understand what his desires and his thoughts are, and then build on that. Or when I'm just, you know, telling him about things, I'm always want him to know that there are always other different options, and there is always a choice. So what I do is, I show him what I think is right, but at the same time, I just always tell him that, you know, when people tell you something, just, you know, think it over and don't take it just that as it is, because there is always a choice of making a different decision.
And that's why you won Parent of the Year in Armenia. So thank you. All right, okay, we're coming to the tail end here. Can you talk to us about your work at AnnieAlexander.com, why you're so passionate about it, where people can find you, and what you hope to achieve with your mission.
Well, AnnieAlexander.com is my website, which has mostly my podcast featured on that. So you have the archive episodes, and you can listen to everything I've done so far. My podcast is not old. It's just 2 months old. I recently launched it, and it covers mostly, its mission is to encourage and inspire writers, and well, main mainly newbie writers because those are the ones who need it most. But I'm also interviewing people who are in self-publishing, and you know, we follow their journey of how they started. They share tips and tricks of, you know, how to sell more books and how to start things over and what worked for them, what didn't. So it basically it's something that writers will need to know when they just start, so they don't really make the same mistakes as we did in the beginning, or they immediately get the tips that can work and they can, you know, use them for their books. So it also features different musings, thoughts, and some of my books there, but the main focus is on the writers. So this website just tries to provide value and information for writers just all in one place, because when I was just starting, I learned everything from scratch and I spent too much time surfing the internet and looking at different things and resources and things like that. So here what I'm trying with this podcast is to provide them all the information they need for the beginning. And I'm also researching different tools and service providers who can help out. And, you know, if I try it myself and I'm satisfied, I share it with the writers so they just know that, you know, it's not because, you know, you can end up meeting different companies, which, I mean, I was offered by a company to be published, which is being sued now. And the amounts they were asking for were huge. Mm-hmm. And what there are many companies which are kind of, you know, using this emotional thing for the writers and their dream of seeing their book published. And they just explode that in a negative way. So I'm also trying to just, you know, warn people in a way that, you know, I'm just recommending only the things that I've used myself or that I know the provider of, and I'm sure that they will be satisfied.
Wow. I mean, so, that's a great service. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I'm just starting to provide, it was unofficial because people were coming to me and I wasn't really, you know, I didn't set up that yet. But now many people approach me for different trainings and coachings. So I'm consulting them for their books and I'm helping some to promote the books they already self-published but are not selling well. So it depends. I mean, depending on what the person needs me to help him with, we kind of, you know, he gets connected to me. We have a chat on Skype for a while and we just understand for each other whether we are the right match to work together, whether I can help with something or not. Because if it's something if someone comes to me and says, I want to sell a million copies of my book, of course I will say, sorry, you should go to someone else because I can't help you. But if there are things which I know and I can do and I can help, I'm more than happy to do that.
No, I think it's great. And it's funny, we have a lot of similarities. We're both diplomatic kids. I just became an author. You've been a best-selling author, so I'm just going to be following your footsteps in that. And then new podcasters. Yours is 2 months. Mine, at the time of this recording, is 3 weeks. This will probably come out around the 2 month area, but you know.
So you'll have this honeymoon period of being in new and noteworthy. I just got out of there a few days ago because, you know, they keep it for a certain period of time and then later on you're not new anymore, obviously. So you get out for a while.
Now you're what's hot, so that's the next step for you. So
yeah, that's the next challenge.
Well, thank you so much, Ani. One, before I leave, I just want you to give your 11-year-old self a piece of advice and then I'll close.
I guess it will be like 3 pieces of advice. Believe in yourself, follow your passion so you don't really waste your time in corporate for years. And just, you know, help people.
Help people. Yeah. Follow your passion, don't waste your time in corporate, help people. Okay.
Well, I follow your passion. So you jump there straight away, not just trying things which don't work for you, but just go straight to what does.
Gotcha. So where can we find you?
Well, it's you can find me on the website www.annialexander.com. Annie spelled A-N-I, and all the social icons are there. So I'm using mostly Facebook and Twitter, but I'm also represented in other social media too. So from the website, you can just go and check all the profiles you're more interested at, and basically that's where I am.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you. And I particularly enjoyed the Armenia education part because now I know a lot more about that region.
Well, okay. Thanks a lot for inviting me over. It was usually I'm the one who's interviewing, so it's quite a nice experience, a big change.
I'm happy to help you out with that experience.
Thanks a lot. Well, I wish you success with your podcast and with the big writing pieces you did over those days when you had this inspiration.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uidmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.